ASEA New Horizons, where law enforcement practitioners and academics get together to share knowledge and ideas to shape the future of crime analysis.
Today I'm joined with Tanya Conaway-Grimm, who works in a variety of roles in different organisations such as the NHS and the police. She's on the autistic spectrum and is an experienced presenter and workshop facilitator on a variety of subjects including autism, neurodivergence, co-production and missing persons. She has a BSc in Biological Sciences and also a degree in Forensic Investigation. She's also a member of the Regional Counterterrorism Advisory Group and sits on the advisory board of Locate International, which specialises in reviewing cold cases, homicides and long-term missing person cases using open source intelligence. Autistic Detective is a project to explore the positive attributes of autism and how it can benefit investigations. And I definitely think this is something we're going to be talking a lot about today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's a real pleasure.
Welcome. So we were just having a very good conversation. We were meant to be recording a podcast, but it's great to have you on. And I am fascinated with what you're doing and your take on it. And I don't think we speak about this topic in particular enough. So you take the floor.
Ooh, ouch. Okay. I suppose the project really came about because of my voluntary role with Locate International. And we noticed that some of our best student investigators were actually on the autistic spectrum. So it made me think about, what attributes do autistic people have? What traits do they have that may be specific, you know, specifically useful to investigations? So when we started looking into that more in detail, it quickly became clear that a lot of the attributes, autistic traits, if you like, are also traits of an outstanding detective. The project was born. And so we developed a presentation on it, wrote an article on it, and I'm presenting around the autistic detectives, and we're developing that project further within Locate International. Because I'm also a member of the National Police Autism Association, and within there you come across it time and again that people are autistic or they might have ADHD or things like that on the neurodiversity spectrum. And they're in the closet. They're not openly out at work. They make outstanding police officers, but they don't feel supported. And often they might be very stressed. They may be bullied at work, misunderstood, reasonable adjustment, refused. And I think, you know, that community is really missing a trick here, because they have a potential pool of highly intelligent, highly skilled people with the right qualities that's not being supported and that are then leaving in stress. There's some organizations who are a lot better at this, including GCHQ, who actively recruits people with ADHD and who are on the autistic spectrum because they realize the specific qualities that they can bring to an investigation. And there's also large commercial companies like JP Morgan Chase, the bank, Google, Microsoft, organizations like that, they actively recruit. And then there's military organizations like the Australian Defence Force and the Israeli Defence Force as well, who have special units, particularly around cybersecurity and visual aerial imagery analysis, where they actively recruit autistic people, intensively support them and get incredible results.
So you were saying about the skill set that autistic detectives or analysts, for example, can bring to the table. What are these skills that you've seen are very effective?
Well, if you look at autism in general, first of all, and how autism is diagnosed, it's done on a deficit model. So it's about everything that's wrong with the person. They might have problems with social interaction, with social imagination, with social communication. They have what's known as a rigidity of thinking, a repetitive behavior. They might be quite obsessive about collecting things. Now, if you turn that on its head and realize that these people have a great attention to detail, often very visually oriented. So if they are that way inclined, they're very good at proofreading, like I am, because a mistake or even a double space between words in the large documents jumps off the page at me. It's wrong. I know something is wrong. And then I'll say, I know something is wrong. Where is it wrong? Think of it as computer coding, that somebody can look at reams and reams and reams of computer code and spot that one little anomaly that nobody else has spotted because they are visually oriented. Think about collecting. So people might like to collect facts, or they might take have great fun learning lots of different and difficult languages. Or it could be all sorts of things. So it's that great attention to detail, but also a very high level of focus on things. And that is a sustained focus. So if something is a special interest, that interest is not going to go away in 5 minutes. If they like doing something, they'll like doing something for a very long time. Now, if that something is, for instance, looking at reams and reams of computer code, that's a really good thing because most people would find it quite boring. But if you're into that and it's your passion, then you love doing it. You won't want to do anything else. This is great. You get paid for it. It's fantastic. So people who understand that and who can utilize that natural talent for that longevity, for the long-term memory, that visual ability, that attention to detail, spotting mistakes, spotting things that are different, who look for patterns in things. And a lot of autistic people like patterns. So children have the amazing ability, for instance, to recognize endless strings of numbers in car registrations. And they like to collect that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know, last week, there was a lovely article in the news about an autistic boy who has a passion for collecting car hub caps. And so he finds them and he takes them home and he polishes them and stores them. And then when he drives around with his parents, if he spots a car, because of course in his mind it is completely stored, everything that he has, he says, oh, that car is missing one. And he'll leave a note on the car to say, I've got this. I've got something, that will fit your car. And that's what he does. But that's a very typical autistic trait, that collecting, that remembering of that information and officially recognizing, sometimes just as he drives around with his parents, like, oh, there's a car, that's missing, I've got that one at home. And what an amazing thing to do. It can, of course, go wrong when they're into collecting the wrong kind of things, but, but that's a very simple example of something a very innocent thing, but that's also provides a service to other people. And it's nice to see a nice story about an autistic person in the press rather than the usual negative ones. But for instance, that attention to detail can be fast and wide. Some people are really good at hearing things, so they can hear if there's a problem with the electricity in the house. Now, most people wouldn't be able to hear electricity, right? There's one young man I heard of from a wonderful researcher called Dr. Luke Bearden from Sheffield, and he told the story about how a father took Luke to their house and wanted to introduce his autistic son. And his autistic son had a very special ability, and that was that he could, by smell, tell you where a can of baked beans came from, which shop. So they tested this out. Can you imagine being able to smell just literally? That's that. And he knew exactly which shop it had come from. Because for him, each shop had an individual smell that the can would actually, I presume the paper would absorb, and he could smell that. Now, what the practical use of that is, I don't know, but I'm sure there is one. But how amazing. Somebody being that sensitive to something. And what a skill. Wow.
Yeah, well, I think I'd like that skill. I wouldn't mind that. It's
amazing, right? And we tend to look at autism in a very negative way. Yeah. If you can put it to use, if you can celebrate that somebody is different and look at turn the negative into a positive, which is what I like doing. And if you think about ADHD, it is normally seen as a very negative thing. Somebody's hyperactive, they're into substance misuse often, for which there is actually an explanation. They're very impulsive. There's often a criminal behavior because of the impulsivity. They get into trouble, uncontrollable. But turn that on its head and think about a personal trainer who's got ADHD. If you have a personal trainer with ADHD, right, what are you going to have? An awful lot of fun, because they're full of passion, they're full of energy, they're full of creativity. You're never going to be bored. You always have a good laugh. Now, personally, I'd prefer a personal trainer like that.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, you do 10 push-ups, you know. It's really boring. They make it fun. So you can turn things on its head. But yeah, it's supporting that person in developing their positives and finding out what it is they're good at. And unfortunately, as a society, we're really poor at that.
Yeah. And
supporting a person. If you have a great detective and they are, if you're like a closet autistic detective, how can you support that person to be happier in their job so they don't have to go off sick due to stress and misunderstanding?
I think it's like you said, you know, adopting these skills in a positive way for those individuals to feel comfortable. They love their job, but there's just not
totally
the support. And it's a shame, because you're right. They bring things to the table that, let's say, other analysts are not able to do, because they're so sensitive to particular aspects, or they focus on a particular point.
Yeah. I think, but it's important to remember that, you know, originally, when you looked at business boardrooms, executive boardrooms, you know, it was all men of a certain class and background and money standard and all that. And we decided we needed to diversify and have some equality, right? Mm-hmm. So some younger white men in as well. So that was good. And then it was, oh, we should have more women in the boardroom. So we brought some women in. And then it's like, everyone is white. We should have more racial diversity. So bring in people with different colors and different cultures and religions, different sexualities. But what they still failed to see was that if everyone thinks the same, you're not actually that diverse. You might be diverse in gender or whatever, but actually you're not diverse in your thinking. When you bring neurodivergent people in, people who think differently, who have a different take, it's when you can get real solutions. And slowly that is changing. So you're getting more companies that are actually bringing neurodiversity on board, because they've realized often they're very good at problem solving, because they do not think like everyone else. And that is an absolute gift to any service, whether it's intelligence or crime or business. Mm-hmm. So he thinks differently, thinks outside the box, and sometimes the ideas may be wrong, but so can anyone else's be. But often there can be an insight or a different take on something. You're thinking, this is good.
Interesting. Yeah, with autism and autistic detectives. I've said this before. I never thought of it. I never thought of, because it's not spoken about. I mean, I've been studying intelligence for nearly 5 years now, and not once have I come across this topic. I've come across skills for analysts and how they should be and what's expected of them, but never have I come across skills for an autistic detective or support. That's worrying, isn't it?
Yeah, so the only support really that I can think of is the National Police Autism Association. I mean,
yeah.
Interested, look them up. They are a fabulously supporting organization, and the membership is free. But the stories you hear from people who are misunderstood and who have a lot of trouble at work, but who are really great at their job, and I can't help but feeling a bit sad, thinking, gosh, there's so much potential, so much talent.
Yeah,
an organization or as services, you are missing out on something that, with the right support and the right adaptations, which don't need to cost the earth, you can make a real difference in retaining a person or losing a person due to stress. And what's the point of that? You spent years developing a person to get to a certain position. Why would you want to lose them? It makes no sense. But then autistic people tend to be logical. So a lot of people don't make much sense to them anyway.
Have you found then that when you've spoken with autistic detectives or autistic analysts, are they able to talk to you about this openly, or are they worried?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, because there's, within the MPAA, it's a closed platform. So you have to apply for membership and everything. And if you are a police officer, you're allowed to use a nickname, so not your own name.
Yes.
And it's quite sad to see that a lot of the police officers do, because they are worried. And that's wrong.
Yeah. That,
feel worried about talking openly about, you know, they might say, oh, I'm in this police force, I'm having this problem. And it's interesting that some police forces are really good at supporting their people. And there's some police forces who are, for instance, really good at supporting autistic detained persons, but they haven't got much of a clue how to support their own autistic workforce.
That's crazy.
I'm busy.
Yeah, you're so busy. I've told you already, and you need to take me everywhere with you. This is so.
We would have a lot of fun, Paige. We really would.
Why did I never? Maybe it's my fault. Maybe I haven't even thought of it.
People don't think about it, and they don't see the link between autistic traits. That, of course, not every autistic person is different and unique. So not everybody has these traits. But why don't you select them? Or why don't you support the people you already have in your organization? And surely it's more cost effective to support a person than it is for them to go long-term sick with stress.
Yeah. And in terms of mental health, that individual, they must feel so lonely and isolated.
They do.
They encourage teamwork and that unity. That's just...
One of my hobby horses, I guess, is job descriptions and interview panels. So descriptions, regardless of the role, they might be asking for somebody who sits in a dark back room looking at computers all day on their own, has no interaction with anybody, and they're still going about teamwork. Why? A lot of roles don't need teamwork. Or if they need teamwork and the person finds teamwork hard, but that person has exceptional skills, put a few adjustments in place so that that person can still function happily in that environment. Why do you say in the job description, we want you to be highly focused, have great attention to detail, and really, you know, put you all into this, but you must also be happy to be continuously interrupted by other people? Why?
Yeah.
If you want to do somebody to do something important that requires high focus and high detail, why do you say they're doing something, we're not going to disturb them for the whole afternoon because they really need to get into that zone and really focus on that? Why would you endlessly disturb them? Because autistic people often do not like change.
Yeah.
Once they're into something, they don't like to be disturbed. What a gift, actually. Great, they're not going to get bored of what they're doing. When I did my original postgrad research, on day one, I was as enthusiastic and loving my subject as I was on the final day. Is normally with research by the last day thinking, I'm really glad to see the back of that. I was just as passionate. So that's that thing, is you don't get bored with whatever it is that you really love.
So like, really,
but again, it's a great gift.
Absolutely. But like, a problem there is what you've just said at the beginning of the process of that individual wanting a career, they've basically already shown that they don't have any idea of how to support you. And if you are going to
I call it proactive outreach. Say, if you write something in a job description that actually shows that you're not just paying lip service to, oh, we really value applications from people from underrepresented minorities, like whatever the underrepresented minority is, it means nothing. Did they say at this point, like, we actually really want you to apply, and this is what we put into place to support you. Mm-hmm. If there's anything else, these are the three ways you can communicate with us. So choose whichever method you're most comfortable with communicating, and we will support you. Now you're talking at a different level. Have you worded your job description in such a way it would actually attract? There's one organization that regularly sends me job opportunities. Would you like to apply for this, Tanya? And every time I say, no, I don't. Because... they have the wrong job description. So over the years, you know, they're getting better every time. I must give it to them. But they still don't quite get it. They do make an improvement. But then if you get through that stage, all right, and you get to the interview panel, the most common question at the beginning is, tell us a bit about yourself. In my case, you'll get a total blank. Yeah. And if you're really lucky, I might talk about, I've got rare breed sheep. I might start talking about my sheep, which is, as I discovered, not really what they wanted. But what have they asked? Tell me a bit about yourself. And I've also been known to say, what do you mean? What do you want to know? I do not understand your question.
Yeah.
It sounds like I'm being very stupid, but I'm not, because you have not asked me a question I can answer. If you ask me a question in the right way, if you start with my name, Tanya, Tanya, I'm now going to ask you about your secondary school qualifications. So, Tanya, what was your favorite subject at secondary school? You've used my name. I know you're talking to me. You've told me what you're going to ask me about in general. And then you ask me a really specific question. I can answer that.
In fact,
no specific subject, actually, like the secondary school. That's a different question, story. But, you know, it's that being really specific. It's saying to an autistic person, if you're a police officer, for instance, can you tell me your name? The answer to that will be, yeah. You think, yeah, very funny, right? Let's try again. Can you tell me your name? Yeah. Because you haven't asked for the name. You've asked, are you physically capable of telling me your name? Yeah. You haven't said, what's your name? It's communication. Little twist, if you say to an autistic person, in whatever setting, I'll be back in a minute. And how often do we all say that? I'll be just 2 minutes. Now, that person will most likely start counting. Okay. Yeah. So when you come back after 5 minutes, when you said you were going to be a minute, you will be told to the minute and second how long you've actually been away. And you've also, at that point, proven yourself to be a liar because you didn't tell the truth. So if you don't know the exactness, you're better off saying, look, I'm going to go away. I'll come back as soon as I can. I'm not entirely sure how long, but I will come back as soon as I can. Hmm. Yeah? Because that way, you haven't made it so specific that the person expects you to be back at that time. It's taking things literally. Yeah. And that is, and that, you know, that can be very powerful. And it's with autistic people, often their facial expression are no match to what they're feeling. And I often do a little thing in training. I show them a photo and ask them to explain what that person is feeling. And hardly anyone gets it because it doesn't show. So we all rely on body language generally in life. What if you can't read body language? What if your body language is all wrong? What if that person in front of you is quite shifty and kind of fidgeting and they're avoiding eye contact and they're getting really uncomfortable because they're sitting on a chair with the wrong kind of fabric that really irritates them? You're thinking, if you're a police officer, that person is guilty as hell. Look at that. Really suspicious.
They might not be.
No, because they might be really irritated by the fabric on the chair and it might have a big impact on them. Mm-hmm. They might not have been able to express to you, they might not have eaten for 3 days, or they need to go to the loo, but you didn't say they could, so therefore they can't go and they're getting really uncomfortable. It might be too hot, too cold, and they might not be able to make that eye contact. So, or they might tell you something, if it, for instance, in a health setting about, you know, I hurt myself. But they might say it with a smiling face, or they might say they've had experience of horrendous trauma and they're smiling about it, even making a joke about it, and they're not taken seriously. So you need to think about listening to what that person says rather than making judgments based on your perception of for instance, behavior as somebody presents. And that can be really tricky. If you were communicating with somebody you knew was autistic, you could ask them or work with them to find out what is the preferred communication method. Often it's email, because they can look at the email in their own time. It's clear, it's all written down, so they can read it and process it in their own way, rather than somebody popping their head around, oh, can you just do this, blah, 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 and, you know.
Because you're distracting them.
Yeah, it's not, it's distracting. Yeah. They might have been focused on something, so they're actually not really paying attention to you. It might be open to interpretation, what you're saying. And so always be happy to be asked for clarification. Mm. And sometimes people get a bit upset about that.
Most, I don't understand.
Most autistic people also tend to be very direct and very honest. And that can, again, as we've talked about before, quite backfire, particularly in an interview panel.
Yeah.
And somebody might ask an opinion about something, and an autistic person is very likely to give an honest opinion regardless of who it is that's sitting in front of them. And that certainly happened to me when somebody asked me about the company website, and I didn't say it was a rude word, but it was. So I tried to be very constructive about it. I think it could do with some editing and da da da. And I didn't realize the person asking me the question was the person who wrote that website, was very proud of that website. I didn't get the job. I think that was a blessing, probably for both of us. Because, you know, if you want an honest opinion and constructive feedback,
you're going to get it.
I'm your friend. Be careful what you ask sometimes, or be prepared for an honest answer. And if you are, you can work very effectively with the person.
Time to take a quick break. We'll hear more on this topic after we have listened to this week's snippet.
And now let's get to this episode's analysis snippets with me, Suzanne Knaber-Nicole from Police Science Doctor. Self-selection policing. Catching the big fish by looking at the little things they do. People who do big bad things also do little bad things. Criminal careers are more varied than police think. It is often easier to detect the small crimes committed by the big players, especially during the pandemic. For example, drug dealers, people traffickers, and others may be caught contravening pandemic rules in order to carry out their much more serious crimes. The original research document this comes from can be found in the episode show notes.
And we spoke. You gave an example of how an autistic individual can be distracted. And you said to me, if someone came in from the outside and said, it's raining outside, and, you know, it's raining, I'm wet. You said, well, I know, I'm looking at you. I know you're wet. I can see it's raining. I really didn't need to know that. You've now distracted me from my work. Mm. Simple things like that, which we think, okay, is a conversation. We're trying to start a conversation or trying to be friendly or whatever. That actually is that has a negative impact on that individual, because I don't know, how long does it take, do you think, for them to get back into the swing of what?
Sometimes I know for me personally it can be a long time, which is I'm really focusing on something I need to do. I like to call it getting into the zone, so like 15 minutes beforehand I'll really just think about that, and I have to switch off my phone, not look at the emails, and just totally focus it. If I then get interrupted, I sometimes can't get back into it. And that precious time I have to look at something, because I'm so totally focused on doing that, and effectively so, that, you know, if somebody takes you away from that, it's really hard, which can be the same when you have children, which is why as an autistic parent, it can be very hard, because what do children do? They endlessly interrupt you. So, you know, you're thinking, whatever you're doing, so it can be really, really hard. I think parenting for autistic parents can be harder than it is for that are not autistic, because there's the constant overwhelm. A lot of people on the autistic spectrum will be very sensitive to things. They might be either hypo or hypersensitive to anything from smells, light, sound, structures, textures, you know, fabrics, anything. And that can lead to an overwhelm. And with children, people think it's a tantrum, but it's actually called a meltdown. And it's the kids that you see in the supermarket that all of a sudden lie on the floor screaming, and the poor parents getting all the judgment, like, oh, just slap him, just... Actually, this child needs some help. It is totally overwhelmed by what is a very stressful environment. The last thing the poor parent needs is people judging them. The last thing the child needs is people being really helpful, you know. But it can happen to adults as well. And if that stress of trying to fit in with your surroundings, trying to be like everyone else because that's what's expected of you, and that particularly female autistic people have that, they're very good at something called masking and camouflaging. So they pretend to be like everyone else. It's exhausting. And eventually it has negative impacts on both your mental and your physical health, and can lead to something that is in the autistic community known as autistic burnout, when they're just
nothing left.
That's it. And it can take a long time for people to recover from that. And it's unnecessary. That's my point.
It's not unnecessary. Because it's simple. You were saying it's so simple to meet the needs of these individuals. You were saying earlier it could just be moving them to another room so they can concentrate.
You think of an office, you know, and they sit in a quiet corner. Can you remove the ticking clock? Can you? And what's interesting, that if you make something autism friendly, you also make it people friendly often. There's a police force that recently did a refurbishment of all the custody centres, And one of the things they did was change the lights. And the custody sergeants actually wrote to the inspector in charge saying, thank you so much, because it's made our lives a lot better as well. Yeah. So by making it friendly for one particular group, actually everybody enjoyed the improvements in the environment. Because nobody likes bright flickering.
Bright lights, yeah. I study with the lamp on the desk. Yeah. I have a lamp because I can't deal with the lights. It's too much for me, and staring at the screen as well. It's way too much.
And it's about, it's things like making things predictable. There was a teacher that I heard of who had an autistic boy in his class, and the boy needed to know when it was the end of the lesson. So he set this timer so that 5 minutes before the end of the class, the timer would go off, the boy would know it's 5 minutes, I can, prepare him for the change in what was going to happen next. It made it predictable. And one day the boy was ill for a few days. Anyway, the teacher didn't set the clock, and the class erupted in chaos because every single child in that class had learned to expect the clock, had made it predictable for them as well. Oh, it's 5 minutes to the end of the class.
Yeah.
That fell away all of a sudden.
Because they need that structure.
Everybody benefited. That was the whole point. The whole class benefited from the adaptation for one child. So it's not you're not doing anything unreasonable. Yeah. Sometimes things, of course, are far more complex. But in the context of this, of thinking about police officers, about analysts, that is, the adaptations don't have to be complex. It might be you say you're absolutely fine working with a set of noise reducing headphones. It can be as simple as that, and that's not you're not being difficult. You're just actually making sure you don't get sensory overwhelmed. Yes, it's okay to work in a dark office. And do you have a room where you can go when you feel too overwhelmed without people bothering you? It can be simple things. Can somebody work from home instead? Mm. Can they come in at different times so they avoid the busy times on public transport, which they may find overwhelming?
Yeah.
Bring their dog to work because it helps keep them calm when they're traveling.
Yeah.
Is there a reason why not?
Simple things. And I think this needs to be spoken about more. It really does.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think the point is that autistic people and autistic analysts and autistic detectives have so much to offer. And it seems insane we don't support them. And it seems insane to me personally, as a logical person, we don't actually actively recruit and select for those traits. When you know that there are people, if you test autistic people and they have those traits, they would make great analysts or chemists or whatever it is that they're interested in for that. And also, once you've got them, they're very unlikely to move on, because if they like something, why would they change it?
So, so interesting. This has been an interesting conversation. And it's not the last conversation I'm going to have with you. I think I'm going to be scheduling my Wednesday morning coffees with you.
Yes, we were going to do that, weren't we?
And because you're so inspirational when you're right, you're logical.
And I think that's my passion. I really want to get to help people understand, and also to empower people to stop thinking so negatively about themselves and to see they've got so much to offer, because that's crucial, and it would help everyone.
Absolutely. Well, got a lot of work to do, and I will be definitely asking you how it's all going.
We'll have fun together, Paige. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much, honestly. And I'm going to put all your details at the end of on your bio when we publish this, and hopefully this interests and inspires other people to talk about it. So
I hope so. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Thank you.